green gemstone. She placed her hand on the stone and concentrated her thoughts.
Hello, Vendria.
Another thought, another voice, sang out to answer her.
I hear your voice, Lydia. I have been alone for too long. Why do you keep me imprisoned here?
Lydia's heart sank at the sadness within the melodic tones of the stone's voice. She had discovered that the stone was intelligent shortly after she had retrieved it from the battlefield after Adon's defeat. Talion had found the stone in the Paths of Ascension, but he had not known what he carried. And she still had not told him. It was not something that would be easy to explain.
I'm sorry, Vendria. I need to keep you safe, so that you are not used as a weapon again. You may carry me, then. I will permit it.
Lydia considered that offer.
Others seek you out to try to chain you, just as the people of Zixis did. Their chains cut deeper than yours, but I am chained here nonetheless. I must be free, or I will lose what little remains of myself.
Lydia drew in a sharp breath. She had come here to seek the advice of the ancient being bound within the stone, hoping it might know how to injure a Vakess. But the stone itself held vast power, enough that it might serve that purpose itself. The sentience within it was fractured, only a part of the being that had once been called Vendria. The stone had explained that she had once been a powerful entity that had been shattered, and this gem was what remained of her essence. Lydia suspected that other pieces of Vendria might exist elsewhere and hoped to seek them out when time permitted such a journey. Lydia did not expect to seek the remaining pieces of Vendria soon. Her responsibilities weighed too heavily. But she could, perhaps, give the being a hint of freedom.
All right, Vendria. Let's go.
Days later, Lydia received news that her request to pursue Vakess Sterling had been placed on hold until the trial of Taurean Dianus was concluded. In response, she took a rare leave of absence to pursue personal interests. She was permitted to remove Vendria from the vault for research under the stipulation that the gemstone would be returned when she finished her investigation into its nature. A few days after that, she arrived at a familiar tower, knocking on the door. Moments later, an older man opened the door, a ruby ring shimmering brightly on his right hand.
Miss Hastings.
Blake Hardigan smiled softly, offering her a hand.
Are you ready to begin your training?
Chapter 27 Velis 8 Duel.
Applicant Velis Jaldan, are you prepared for your final trial?
She raised her quarterstaff to salute Colonel Wyndham, grinning brightly. Her ribs were mostly healed thanks to Aladir Tethereal's expert ministrations, and her body was armored in both metal and sorcery.
Applicant Solaris, are you prepared for your final trial?
Across the arena, Velis could see Talion raising his own blade in salute to the Colonel.
Good. Each of you is currently protected by an armor spell. Your objective will be to deal as much damage to the target as possible, which our sorcerers will be measuring during the match. You will still feel hits, and injuries are still possible. If one of you manages to collapse the other's armor spell, you will win immediately. This is not a lethal contest. Do you both understand the rules?
Yes, ma'am!
They shouted in unison.
One last thing. The arbiters have judged that Dominion-marked and Dominion-bonded equipment is allowed in these matches.
There was a hush in the crowd, and Velis could see many eyes turning toward the sword on Talion's left hip. She made the satisfied smile of someone with a secret carefully concealed.
Turn to face each other and salute.
Velis turned and saluted Talion, noting the grin on his face that mirrored her own as he raised his blade to his chest. Her armor was purely leather, enough protection to provide a cushion against his blows, but without any metal components that Talion could manipulate. Similarly, she had armed herself with a weapon she knew he could not command, though she had a wooden sword sheathed at her side as a backup weapon, if he somehow managed to disarm her. He was armored in a brigandine tunic, leather with metal plates sandwiched within, and leather gloves, bracers, and greaves. He didn't need to worry about her manipulating metal, but she suspected he had anticipated her own choice of armor and chosen something similar to prevent it from significantly reducing his mobility. He drew the red-bladed sword, but that was just his opening move. She itched to force him to use his real weapon, and she knew exactly how she planned to do so. It's finally time.
Begin!
There was no charge forward, no blur of movement. This was a battle to be savored, not one to be rushed.
A quarterstaff, Velis? Really? That desperate to keep me from breaking your toys?
He walked casually toward her, patting the flat of his sword against the palm of his left hand. She matched his pace from the opposite side of the arena.
Your arrogance is going to get you in trouble again, Talion. Or I'm sorry, is it Solaris now? Maybe someday you'll figure that out.
10 feet away. I'll move soon. Even in the distance, she saw him roll his eyes.
Don't mistake optimism for arrogance. I just have every advantage over you, that's all. Strength, determination, reach.
Reach? She frowned. He was just carrying a normal blade. She danced back and to the left just as he began his swing, the bottom portion of the red blade shifting into a length of chain. The momentum of his swing carried the chain toward her like a whip, and her movement was not sufficient to carry her out of the path of the weapon.
Better go up, then. Surge!
The blast of force carried her over the chain to a cheer from the crowd, and as she began to descend, she focused again.
Surge!
The blast pushed her back downward at a diagonal angle toward Talion. She swung her staff as she moved, aiming directly at his head, and knowing his sword would be unable to make a proper parry in its current state. Talion moved to sidestep her swing, raising his left bracer into a blocking position as he shifted his stance. Her swing connected with the bracer, causing a flicker of sorcerous sparks to erupt from the impact, and she called upon the Dominion of Motion again to slow her as she reached the ground. She gave no pause on reaching the ground, granted no quarter. The staff spun in her hands, smashing into his shin. As his chain began to retract, she released one hand from her grip to grab it.
Surge!
He planted his feet, barely managing to maintain his grip on the hilt, while the burst of motion attempted to wrest it from his grasp. And then he turned his gaze at her and grinned.
Might want to watch what you're holding.
The chain caught fire. Velis cursed, feeling a momentary surge of pain as the flames licked against her hand. The sorceress armor prevented the fire from dealing any significant damage, but the burn was real, and the pain jarred her out of her focus. A moment later, the sword was whole again, and still on fire. Talion took it in both hands, swinging a heavy cut at her chest. Velis took a step back, deflecting the strike clumsily with the one hand she still had on her staff. Wincing, she renewed her two-handed grip, but she knew that continuous parries would abrade the burn and make it harder to hold over time.
I admit, I wasn't expecting the jumping trick quite so soon.
Talion assumed the Salian stance, raising his weapon above his head for a heavy strike.
But I don't think you're going to be doing many more of those. It tires you out too much and slows you down.
Velis shook her head.
I've barely even gotten started, and you've already used both your metal sorcery and your fire.
At least I have two tricks. You've only got the one. Velis stepped forward and parried his downward strike. He pressed it, attempting to cut through the wooden weapon as she knew he would. She felt the nearby aura of flame, but it wasn't close enough yet. She slid her burned hand to the center of the staff, near where it intersected with the blade, and brushed her fingers against the flame again. This time, she was ready.
Expulse!
The flames blasted away from the blade, slamming into Talion's chest. He staggered back, releasing a hand from the grip on his blade to bat away the fire on his leather. She pursued, swinging a heavy stroke at his legs, but he hopped over it. Her hand burned from the contact, but she smirked.
That's two tricks for each of us. Want to see a third?
Talion pulled his hand away from his singed armor, holding a ball of flame within his fingers.
I'm always happy to see you try to match me, Velis. Maybe one day you'll even come close.
He waved his hand, sending the ball of flame at her. She stepped to the side, avoiding it easily, but he used the distraction to rush forward and slam his pommel into her jaw. She reeled back, taking a punch from his offhand to the chest before she recovered enough to regain a defensive stance and ward him away with her staff. He began to circle her to the right, so she moved as well, opening and closing her jaw. It throbbed, but it still moved at least. Nothing broken. The armor spell was doing its work. She searched her mind for something else to say, another quip to put him off his guard, but her heart wasn't in it. She didn't want to talk anymore. She was ready to fight. Her left hand slipped underneath one of the pieces of the wooden shell around her true weapon, and she closed her eyes. Burst! Wooden chunks exploded outward as adhesive tore under the force of her spell. The few pieces that struck Velis and Talion didn't do any damage. That was not the point. Beneath the shell laid the Heartlands, weapon of Myros, goddess of battle. Talion let out a startled sound, stepping back and lowering his weapon into a defensive stance. A hush fell over the crowd as she raised the glimmering shaft of metal to strike. Talion moved first. His sword cut a downward arc, aiming at her right arm. She spun the Heartlands, deflecting the strike easily, and dragged the tip of her weapon across his blade as he retreated. The lance's edge left a long rent in his weapon, her artifact more than capable of rending an ordinary weapon apart. The swordsman hissed, tapped the hilt of his own sword, and the metal in his blade shifted and reformed, covering the weakened areas.
"A delaying tactic. You can't sustain that."
He shrugged, resting his sword against the ground, point down. "I don't have to. I just have to keep you distracted long enough for the other weapons to get close." The memory of dozens of magnetized weapons flashed in her mind. Velis spun on her heel, raising her spear to defend, but there were no other weapons. Talion closed the distance between them faster than she had thought possible, but he still was not fast enough.
Surge!
The burst of force carried her backward, out of the reach of his swing. Her legs ached. Her hand throbbed. Her chest burned. The cost of her spells were beginning to tax her too far, but she didn't need to use them anymore. Velis tapped the Heartlands against the ground, four golden lines appearing along the shaft and surging up into her arm. She felt the familiar essence of the weapon flow into her muscles, enhancing her movements. She spun the spear in a single hand, watching the metallic blur, nearly too quick for her own eyes to process. Velis smiled. She sprang forward, carried by the artifact-imbued momentum, and thrust the weapon straight for Talion's chest. He smacked the spear out of the way, but she drew it back down, severing the edge of his weapon and swinging the shaft at his head. Talion ducked the swing, but she stepped in close and slammed the bar into his chest, knocking him backward. He made a swing toward her face as he fell backward, but she backed out of range before the strike connected. She began to circle Talion as he took a defensive stance.
"What were all those advantages you were talking about?"
Velis looked from side to side, inviting him to attack, but he didn't take the bait.
"I don't see any."
Talion smirked, a trail of blood dribbling down the side of his mouth. "It is, I admit, difficult to see ingenuity. Let me show it to you." He swung a strike in the air, too far away to connect, but half of the remainder of his blade detached, flying directly at her. She batted the metal aside easily, frowning.
"Really? That's the best—"
She heard the hiss of the metal flying back toward her and spun, deflecting it again.
"Okay, that could get irritating."
"That's just the first piece." He swiped the weapon again, another metallic chunk breaking free of the blade. She bisected this one with the tip of her spear, but the pieces still hit her, and then flew backward toward Talion's weapon. She turned in time to knock the first piece of metal back out of the way, preventing it from returning to Talion's sword.
"So you magnetized your own weapon and broke it into bits. That's cute, but it's hardly a winning tactic."
He shrugged, raising the remains of his weapon and spinning it around, more pieces of metal breaking free and flowing in circles around it. "Well, I suppose I could light some of them on fire, if it would make you feel better." She shoved her spear into the stone with a single hand, catching the piece of his blade on its return trajectory with her free hand, and crushing it in her Heartlands' enhanced grip. She dropped the distorted piece of metal, allowing it to fly back to its master and glared at him.
"You're not going to beat me with an ordinary weapon."
Talion nodded, tossing his broken weapon aside, the pieces of metal following it and sticking to the remains of the blade. "You're right, of course." He grinned, tilting his head downward, his eyes narrowed dangerously. but you seem awfully eager for me to give you another scar.
Ah, so he knows. Good. That will make this more satisfying.
Talion set his hand on the hilt of the Sekhes, shifting into the instant striking stance. Velis pulled the heart lance out of the arena's floor, poised to strike. A heartbeat separated them. A single moment, with no room for error. Velis leaped into the air.
Surge!
The impact carried Velis downward in an instant, and in that same instant, Talion released the grip on his sword. He reached with both hands for the shaft of the heart lance, and he missed. Velis's spear punctured through his left hand, tearing muscle and breaking bone, stopping only an inch before his chest. Talion fell to his knees, shuddering in agony as Velis withdrew the spear. She raised her weapon to strike again.
Applicant Velis Jaldan has won the match!
Every muscle in Velis's body burned as the crowd cheered, her weapon still poised to strike. As Talion cradled his broken hand, Velis drew in a deep breath, watching, considering.
It is over.
She shoved the heartlance into the stone, reaching down to offer Talion a hand to stand.
For now.
Velis helped Talion walk out of the arena, her heart still pounding with every step.
How long have you known?
Talion gave her a pained smile. The prison test? Seeing you without a shirt attracted my eyes to certain areas. Meaning the scar on the inside of your elbow, of course. She laughed, but her blood still boiled.
Of course.
I had suspicions earlier, of course. Both because of your own behavior and because I knew the first Myros that Adon introduced me to was clearly a fake.
Why didn't you fight me?
Talion straightened, pulling away from her support and cradling his injured arm against his chest.
I did fight you.
I wasn't going easy on you, not in the slightest. Velis let out a low hiss.
You never intended to draw that sword.
He paused in his step, turning to face her directly. That sword is a curse, Velis. It's not meant to be used against people I care for. She took a deep breath, holding the hard lance to her side.
Even if I meant to harm you?
He raised his injured hand.
I'd say you did a pretty good job of that.
Congratulations, Velis. You beat me. She turned her head away.
I almost killed you.
Talion nodded.
I know.
On the parade grounds, 11 applicants stood in a single line, no longer divided by their former platoons. Velis stood between Asphodel and Landon, unwilling to be near Talion, unable to even meet his eyes. Terras, Lysen, and Keldon were all that remained of Platoon 1. In spite of Velis's lack of knowledge about Platoon 4's members, four of them had made it to this point. Of Sterling's former platoon, there was no sign. Their absence was a wound as fresh in Velis's mind as the one she had left on Talion's hand. Colonel Windham stood with Lieutenant Morris and Second Lieutenant Banks, just as she had when they had first begun their examinations. Her expression was somber.
At ease, applicants.
Though she shifted her stance, she did not feel at ease. She suspected the others felt the same.
Of the 486 applicants in this cycle, you alone have shown the courage, wisdom, and determination necessary to survive each of the trials set before you. Though tradition ascribes that each arbiter choose a single candidate, I am pleased that this is one of many traditions we often choose to ignore. Every one of you who remains has passed our tests and has been selected to be a Paladin of Taos.
Velis sighed in relief, and she heard others beside her do the same.
You can cheer.
The Lancer smiled in spite of herself as her comrades broke into celebratory cheering, and the lieutenants made polite clapping. The colonel applauded politely, and then spoke again.
This is but the first step in a long journey. More trials and dangers will face you on the road ahead, but I am confident in your abilities. The arbiters have evaluated each of your tests and determined which branch you are best suited for. Candidates Terras and Landon, step forward.
Landon gave Velis a wink and stepped out of the line. Terras followed a moment later, giving her brother a look of confusion as she moved.
You both displayed strong interpersonal skills and strategic acumen, qualities that are greatly needed in the service of Eritar.
As paladins of Eritar, you will serve as our scouts, messengers, and military advisors. Congratulations.
The other applicants applauded, while Lieutenant Morris walked forward, presenting them each with a new pin signifying their branch.
Wisdom, analytical ability, and...
Asphodel stepped forward.
Of course, you already knew.
The colonel laughed, and the applicants echoed her.
Applicant Asphodel, you have been selected for Cytira's service.
The Dalaran woman nodded politely as Morris offered her the symbol of her new order.
Vigilance, perseverance, fortitude. These are the qualities of a paladin of Koronir. The front line in our battle against any who would threaten the innocent. Applicant Dallin Carter, applicant Mora Aldwin, you have been honored with this role.
Velis didn't recognize either of them, but she clapped and cheered with the others nonetheless.
They're going to pin me with Lissari, aren't they? Such irony that would be.
Honesty, purity, and rational judgment are key qualities in the followers of Xerosilis. Lysen, you have proven to be clear of mind and sound of judgment in even the most difficult of circumstances. For this, you have been chosen for the service of Xerosilis.
More cheering, but Velis was no longer paying attention.
Three options left.
Of all our applicants, one has consistently proven that she is a mender of wounds, both physical and of the spirit. Applicant Aaliyah Karras, your remarkable initiative and presence of mind have made you an ideal candidate for the Paladins of Lissari. Congratulations. Two of you have consistently shown the independence, tactical thinking, and combat prowess necessary to qualify for the Paladins of Ayndaren.
Two of us.
Velis breathed a sigh of relief.
Of course.
Applicant Solaris and applicant Keldon, step forward.
She watched as Solaris stepped forward, no pride in his expression, only resignation. And she saw how his left hand, still covered in bandages, curled slightly into a fist.
Finally, those of you who have shown the greatest willingness to sacrifice for others, and the greatest leadership potential, have been selected for the final branch, the Paladins of Lysandre. Applicants Edwin Fremont and Velis Jaldan. Congratulations.
Velis almost failed to step forward, but Landon smiled and nudged her into place. She accepted the cheering and stood silently as Lieutenant Morris pressed the seal of her new life into her palm.
Sacrifice. I suppose that's one way to find forgiveness. Perhaps even redemption.
The following days flowed swiftly as she moved out of the applicant barracks and into permanent housing allocated for full paladins. Her success felt joyless and hollow in the face of the loss of friends. Garrick Torrent's funeral was a small affair, attended only by a few members of his family and officers he had served with. She was not invited. Instead, she simply paid her respects at his grave. She knelt silently, inspecting the inscription.
Garrick Torrent, passed in the line of duty. May Eritar shepherd his spirit into a life beyond. Born 3098 VF, deceased 3122 VF.
The Lancer shook her head.
That made him what? 24? I suppose it depends on what month he was born. Barely older than me. Too young. Too young to be gone.
She laid a broken piece of wood against his grave, the remains of the marker she had used to call for his help, the weapon she had used to take his life.
Never again. I will never cost another life.
She sat by that grave marker, surrounded by so many others, and prayed for the resolve to hold true to the words in her mind. Chapter 28 Jonan, 7 The Bonds of Family. Jonan sat across from Aladir Tithiriel, a crowns board on the table between them. The scribe was losing badly, which he attributed mostly to his humorous choice to play controlling the paladins of Taos. Aladir contributed to the irony by playing the Thorn Guard, who with their superior mobility and battlefield control held a tremendous advantage in that particular matchup. Nakane Theus sat silently nearby, leaning forward, an expression of wry amusement on her features. She had just concluded a game of her own against her cousin, but Jonin hadn't seen who had won. Landon had headed back inside the manor after his game to get something to eat.
"It's your turn,"
Aladir pointed out, dispelling the haze from Jonin's mind. "Oh, right." He stared back at the board.
"No good moves."
He evaluated his options, found the worst one he could think of, and took it. Aladir narrowed his eyes at the move, saying nothing. "Probably thinks I'm luring him into a trap." Aladir moved one of his sorcerers and attacked Jonin's recently moved lieutenant, removing it from the board.
"Or not?"
Jonin chuckled softly, hoping it sounded as if that was all part of the plan. Nakane shook her head.
"Really, Jonin? You should have played more defensively. You don't have any chance now."
He glanced at her.
"Your confidence is, as always, appreciated."
It was good to see her in a better mood, at least. She had been sulking for weeks, quite understandably in Jonin's opinion, after her mother had died. Jonin looked back at the board, only to have his train of thought interrupted by a tapping sound nearby. He turned in unison with Aladir and Nakane. An older man was approaching from the road, tapping his walking stick against the cobblestones of the path. Bald, save for a slim crest of gray at the back of his skull, he was dressed in a red tunic embroidered with golden thread and matching trousers. More notably, he wore a circlet of thin golden wire, woven into a rethri design resembling a crown. In spite of the obvious marks of age upon his skin, the man walked with his back straight, his eyes still bright with knowledge. Nakane rose from her chair immediately and then fell into a kneeling position. Uncertainly, Jonin rose as well, mirroring her gesture. Aladir waited several moments before doing the same.
"Father,"
Nakane said softly, lowering her head. Edric Theus paused at his daughter's side, looking down at where she knelt, and then walked past her without saying a word. Right to Jonin.
Shit.
"Jonin Kestrian, is it?"
The immortal sorcerer's voice was still strong, in spite of his obviously advanced age.
"Stand up, boy."
The scribe rose awkwardly, folding his hand in front of him.
"Baron Theus, sir, it's an honor to meet you."
The older man grasped his left arm, leaning in close.
"I understand that you nearly lost this in the defense of my house."
Jonin nodded weakly. Edric released his grip, giving the slightest of nods.
"You have my gratitude. That debt will be repaid."
Wordlessly, the sorcerer moved to Aladir.
"Stand up, Tethereal."
Aladir rose, standing taller than Edric.
"Sir, I'm terribly sorry for your losses."
"Oh, right. I really should have said something like that."
Edric made a scoffing noise.
"Please, no platitudes for me, boy. I did not approve of your relations with Kay, but at least you loved him, even if you failed him in the end."
Aladir took a deep breath.
"Sir, I don't blame you for his death. They were prepared for you, that much is certain from what I have already heard. But his killers are alive, and for that I am disappointed in you. You will share with me what you have learned, and we will see to it this is properly resolved."
The Rethri Paladin nodded, his eyes full of pain.
"Of course, sir."
Edric walked back to his daughter last.
"Get up, girl."
Nakane straightened her dress, standing.
"Welcome home, father."
He turned his head, scanning the compound, and then looked back to her.
"Welcome home, indeed."
After Jonin extricated himself from the family reunion to return to Southway Manor, he checked his mirrors, finding a message from Ayara.
"Scribe, it is long past time for your report.
So report." Grimacing, he retrieved a quill, ink, and paper.
"Writing to Symphony?"
Jonin stood up from his chair, startled by the sudden noise. Riala laughed behind him as he turned.
"Gods, you are so easy to startle. I'm sorry."
Jonin set his quill back down on the table.
"It's fine. You should probably be here for this."
She quirked an eyebrow.
"What are you planning to say?"
Still in progress. Not much to go on." She folded her arms.
You should have asked me first, at least. I found our target.
He blinked. You did?
Cassius Morn is currently going as Susan Crimson. She was one of the Paladin applicants. I actually don't know if Susan or Cassius is the real name, but either way, he or she is working with Serling.
Jonan sighed, rubbing his forehead.
Of course the former Thorn God is working with Sterling. That's... I bet she knew.
Riala nodded, bringing a finger to her chin.
She's Symphony. Of course she knew.
So she deliberately sent us after an agent of another one of the Vakes, with the knowledge we could end up in conflict with him.
Sounds like...
Fuck that. I'm going to tell her to... Riala folded her arms.
Don't be stupid, Jonan.
He shook his hands in the air in impotent anger. I know. I'm just... God, it's tiresome being jerked around on puppet strings.
It's the price we pay for the benefits of a Vakes mentor. You know that.
Benefits. I suppose being alive constitutes a sort of benefit, although it might be a shorter-term one than I had hoped. Jonan lowered his hands.
Fine. I'll write her a nice letter. You can help.
Can I?
She wandered over, giving him a playful grin.
I shouldn't have said anything. Still, at least she's smiling. That's a pleasant change of pace.
Pull up a seat. After several minutes of discussion, and Jonan fighting Riala for his quill, they composed a reply. Symphony, we have determined that our target was under the guise of an applicant to the Paladins of Taos, Susan Crimson, and working in conjunction with Vakes Sterling. The pair was involved in an assassination mission, after which they retreated. We have not yet followed their trail. Please advise how to proceed. Shiva and Scribe. Riala had insisted on signing her name first, which Jonan quickly conceded. The reply came almost immediately. My adorable children, your orders have changed. Kill Susan Crimson and retrieve the artifact in her possession. Love, Symphony. Jonan and Riala looked at each other. Riala frowned. Jonan spoke first. Well, fuck. Later that night, Jonan awoke to find a shadow hovering by the side of his bed. He jolted into sudden consciousness, sitting up abruptly and raising his arms into a defensive position before his mind fully processed his visitor.
It's just me, Jonan.
Riala sounded like she was making an effort at a soothing tone, but it came across like she was speaking down to a child.
You really need to learn to knock,
he groaned, sitting up and reaching for his glasses case. After a moment of fumbling, he found and put on the pair specifically designed for meetings with his partner.
We need to go. Now.
Jonan scratched at his head. Go? Riala leaned forward, catching his eyes in hers. If she was attempting to compel him, he felt no indication of it.
My father has been released to house arrest, given the lack of evidence against him. There will be a brief opportunity to question him before he is brought back to trial.
The scribe groaned, massaging feeling into his aching left arm.
Let me get dressed.
Riala didn't bother leaving the room while he changed out of his nightclothes and into something resembling traveling gear. At his gesturing, she did turn around, but if she had any concern about his clothing or lack thereof, she never displayed it. Jonan sighed as he tightened his belt into place, the final piece of his garb. Given that it was late within the hours of the night frost's reign, he wished he had a cloak, but he didn't have one on hand.
Let's go.
They had danced this dance before. Riala led the way to House Dianis, her childhood home. Jonan followed close behind, self-consciously straightening his hair, still tangled from an evening plagued with nightmares.
I take it you want me to hide us?
Riala nodded.
Your technique is more effective than mine. I will bring us through the walls and into my father's room. There will be defensive sorcery in some areas, but I know how to avoid it.
When they reached the outer gates, Jonan waved a hand sleepily, creating a shimmering effect on their skin to enable Riala to see that he had made them invisible to others.
Good,
she whispered.
Take my hand.
He turned to extend his left arm at first, then thought better of it and gave her the right hand. She pulled him forward, and he moved through the metallic front gate without feeling resistance.
I'll never get used to that. Travel sorcery should be 10 kinds of illegal, mostly because it bothers me. I suppose the ease that it enables criminal acts is also relevant, if somewhat less so. I suppose what we're doing is a criminal act?
Well, that's awkward.
Briella urged him on, walking swiftly, taking sharp breaths. He followed, feeling her grip tighten around his hand as she pulled them through the front doors to the manor. The interior was too dark for Jonan to make out much detail. Much like House Theus, he could see lavish furnishings and paintings on the walls, as well as some statues he suspected might serve as defenses when animated by sorcerers. Riala dragged him on, taking him up a flight of stairs. His eyes traveled to the nearest portraits, the only ones he could discern. One of them showed Tyrion Dianis, two small girls seated upon his lap, one with green eyes, the other blue.
Riala, before she fled. What shatters a family to the point where a father seeks to kill his own son?
There were no paintings of Elias, of course. No paintings of an elder Tyrion. He did see one of a woman, however, standing with a younger Tyrion by her side.
The mother.
I've never heard them speak of her. Riala quickened her pace. One last pull through solid material took them into a bedchamber where Tyrion Dianis slept alone. Turned to his side, with his head sandwiched between pillows, he did not look to be the mastermind behind a murder. He looked ordinary. Vulnerable. Riala made a simple sign indicating off. Jonan nodded, concentrating for a moment and waving a hand in acknowledgement. Riala was visible.
Hello, father.
Tyrion didn't respond at all. Riala made a frustrated expression, stepping closer and jabbing a finger into her father's side. The older Rethri took in a sharp breath, turning over and pushing the pillows away from his face. His eyes opened slowly.
What? Liara, what time is it?
I'm not Liara, father.
The older man's azure eyes widened, and only then did Jonan realize that Riala's own eyes had shifted in color to mirror her father's. He pushed himself into a seating position.
Riala! Gods, you've come back to me! I've prayed! Prayed every day, but—
I'm not here for pleasantries, Tyrion.
Her eyes locked on his.
Do not summon the house guards. Do not call for help. Do not call to Liara.
What? Why would I—
Do you mean me harm, Riala?
I would very much like to know the answer to that myself. Jonan folded his arms, still invisible, as he looked on. Riala maintained her gaze, raising her hands and leaning forward.
That depends on how you answer my questions.
Tyrion sighed, closing his eyes.
I have many questions of my own, child. I have missed you. Where have you been for so many years?
That is not your concern right now.
Riala tightened her jaw.
Did you have Nedelya Theus killed?
Tyrion reopened his eyes, taking a deep breath.
A half dozen years without seeing me, and the first thing you do is spout accusations? I'm disappointed in you, Riala. I taught you better than that.
You also taught me to be direct. Answer the question.
Tyrion turned his gaze to the side, indicating he had not been caught by Riala's deception sorcery. If she was utilizing it at all, and spoke into the air.
Not in the direct sense. But I suppose the answer you're looking for is yes. I convinced her to end her own life.
I suddenly feel as if I should have a sound sorcerer with me to make a record of his voice somehow. Is there a sound equivalent to my mirrors? If not, I should devise one.
Why? The older man slumped his shoulders, putting his head in his hands.
It's complicated. Is this really what you want to be discussing with me?
It's the first thing.
Very well.
He leaned back in his bed, turning his head toward the ceiling.
It was necessary. Necessary for the salvation of the world.
Riala's hands tightened.
You don't get to shield your accusations behind vague prophecies.
There was nothing vague about it, child. Nor did I act solely on faith. Have you heard of the Shrouded One?
Riala nodded curtly.
And have you seen what he is capable of? No, I suppose not. Or you would not be asking me this. He would have already set you upon a different path. This,
he waved his hands above him,
is just one potential existence. The Shrouded One sees many possibilities and guides us down a razor-thin trail toward a chance at our world's survival.
The sorceress shook her head.
And this Shrouded One decided that you needed to have Nedelya Theus killed for our world to survive?
No. I admit the Shrouded One's command was not that detailed. Edric Theus must know great and terrible despair. I was among those entrusted with this knowledge, and I chose to fulfill this command myself.
Why? Even if that's true, why would you choose to be the one to do it? And why would you want to hurt someone else just to get to him?
Tyrion smiled softly. Because, child, that is precisely what he did to me.
The Rethri man sat up, straightening his shirt, and then stood and turned away from his daughter.
Do you remember Ellery?
Of course I remember my mother. I wasn't an infant when she died.
Tyrion shook his head.
No, but you were a child, too young to understand what had happened, too young to understand the tragedy of what—
I grieved for mother just as you did. Do not presume your sadness outweighed mine.
Tyrion turned, clenching his jaw.
Sadness? Is that what you expected?
Grief?
It was shame, daughter. Shame that my wife, my joy, my love, had brought another man's child into the world. A half-breed. An abomination. And that creature, that monster, took her life.
Rhaella drew in a sharp breath.
You can't know that.
The sorceress's father shook his head.
It is a kindness that we do not explain to children why some Rethri are born as Uvar. It is a simple thing, when you consider it. They are not Rethri at all. They are born of a human father and a Rethri mother.
Rhaella stepped back, shaking her head vehemently.
No. No. I have studied Uvar for years, father. This cannot be true. Not always true, in every case at the least. I have met both parents of Uvar children.
It is certain that some parents would wish to conceal their shame, or even deny the obvious. But that creature was not my son.
He was still my brother!
Rhaella stepped forward, balling a hand into a fist, but she did not strike. If she's too loud, she may wake others. Guess I might need to be ready to handle a mess.
Tyrion nodded. I understand that now. And for what it's worth, I have prayed day after day to the gods to send you back to me, and to let you forgive me. I see now that they have listened.
Perhaps to the first part.
Rhaella narrowed her eyes.
I will never forgive you.
We are family, Rhaella. You will give me your trust again, given time. I understand now that I made a mistake. I should have done everything in my power to try to save the child, as much as it pained me. I did not expect to lose you over it.
Rhaella turned her head upward, focusing her eyes on her father's.
You should be sorry for wanting to kill a child, father. Not sorry for yourself, for losing me as a consequence of your own actions.
The older man shook his head.
Sending that child to Valyrian was the honorable thing to do. It would have simply festered and died, as all Uvar do. There was—
Elias is alive, father.
Tyrion reacted as if struck, stepping backward, widening his eyes.
No. But how?
I have dedicated every moment of my life since we fled this place to finding ways to help him. And though you will never see him, you should know that he is happy, and that he will never know what you tried to do to him.
It is— I could not have known. All our studies have shown—
Perhaps you should have studied a bit harder before putting a knife to my brother's heart.
Tyrion turned away.
If this is true, I admit that our people's tradition may have been in error.
Still deflecting. Always deflecting. You were wrong. You, personally. But that still hasn't answered my earlier question. Why would you want to do Baron Theus harm? And why through others?
I should think that was obvious. But perhaps you are still too young to consider such things. Edric and your mother were close. Need I spell things out further?
Rhaella shook her head.
No, that is quite sufficient. You assume they slept together. You assume that is the reason your wife is dead, and you assume that is the reason your child was born wrong. Did you even bother to investigate, father? Did you ever ask mother if she had lain with him? Did you ask others? Did you think to confront Edric himself?
Tyrion waved his hands, as if cutting the air with them.
Irrelevant!
He turned back to face his daughter.
He was the only one. The only human she associated with closely, and in the right time frame. They knew each other for years, decades.
It was unseemly, but his lifespan was longer than that of an ordinary human, and thus they shared many experiences. I should have cut that bond long before. It is my greatest shame that I did not see the signs sooner.
That was not what you missed, Father.
She turned his head up to meet hers, her eyes shifting from blue to indigo.
Elias was never an abomination. You were.
That's enough, Riala. You will not speak to your father in such a manner.
You're right. I will simply be dictating commands now.
What do you—
Be silent.
Tyrion's mouth snapped shut, a look of confusion stretching across his features.
When I raise my right hand, you will move to your writing desk. You will write a convincing letter to your daughter, Liara, detailing how you could no longer live with your guilt after being involved in the death of Nedalia Theus.
Jonan stepped forward, taking in a sharp breath. Well, this is a dangerous turn of events. I should probably stop her now.
Now that I consider it, Riala continued, I'm going to permit you to speak one last time before I continue with your instructions. Do not call for help. Do not raise your voice above a speaking volume. Do not attempt to turn your eyes away or to flee. Were you involved in the death of Calcerus Theus in any way? Answer my question directly and then stop speaking again.
Tyrion shook, and Jonan saw a trail of blood beginning to drip from the corner of the Rethri man's mouth, but he opened his jaw and spoke again. I hired a man to kill him.
And that man was called Sterling? Reply honestly.
Yes.
Good. Now no more talking. To continue my instructions, you will leave the letter on your writing desk and then immediately take your sword, that one by the bedside.
She gestured to a sheathed weapon,
and stab yourself in the chest with it.
She stepped closer, keeping her eyes fixed on her father's, and spoke more quietly.
You will not seek help. You bleed to death slowly, contemplating the actions that caused you to murder a wife and child, to wound a father, and knowing that your daughter will never forgive you.
And having spoken those final words, Riala Dianis raised her right hand. Jonan vomited quietly into the streets just outside Southway Manor. He had not seen Tyrion Dianis end his own life, but he knew that he had witnessed the man's death and chosen to do nothing to stop it. He did not feel vindicated, even with the knowledge of Tyrion's involvement with the murders at House Theus. He did not feel strong, even knowing that he had helped avenge the death of a child. He felt dirty, sickened. Sickened at his own inability to choose if the sight he had just witnessed was justice or just another twist of fate's relentless blade. He was sick with guilt. Guilt over his failure to guess at Tyrion's role before Nedalia took her own life. He was afraid. Terrified that Tyrion's work had been necessary. Horrified that some entity had believed that one man's misery was the only way to preserve the world. Why? Why would one person's suffering have so much meaning? He would find no answers that night. You have been listening to Stealing Sorcery, The War of Broken Mirrors, Book 2. Produced by Greg Lawrence. Executive producers James Tawn and Greg Lawrence. Text copyright 2016 by Andrew Rowe. Production copyright 2016 by Podium Publishing. All rights reserved. If you enjoyed this audiobook, let us know. Take a quick moment to rate and review it on Audible so we know we're bringing you audiobooks you'll love.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.